Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, this week we're going to talk about a topic that I'm sure is near and dear to many of middle-aged parents' minds right now as their children return to school from summer vacation. And we're going to address the timely topic of how we're going to pay for or select a college and pay for college if your son or daughter wants to attend college next year. And you know, when you buy a new car, I bet you don't end up paying the full sticker price. Few of us do. So why pay sticker price for your son or daughter's college education? And back in March, we introduced you to Ryan Clark and his Clark College Funding website. But we only had about 10 minutes to speak with him, and I've invited Ryan back as a primary guest on this week's program to go into more detail on steps you should take beginning right now to help ensure your teenagers select the right college for them academically, socially, and financially, and avoid paying the outrageous sticker price, which averages about $38,000 a year, including room and board, and prevent the humongous college loan debt load that so many students or recent graduates are loaded on with and have to face going forward, and their parents paying off for years. And Ryan reports that his clients save an average of $40,000 to $60,000 per child on college, so he's definitely worth listening to. And Ryan Clark is founder and CEO of Clark College Funding. He's a certified college planner and a member of the National College Advocacy Group, and he frequently lectures at high schools and professional groups. And he's author of the acclaimed book, College Aid for Middle Class America, Solutions to Paying Wholesale versus Retail. Hello, Ryan, and welcome back to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Hey, Roy, for me.
Well, let me role play. Let's say, you know, it is September 2013. Let's say I have a 17-year-old daughter who thinks she wants to attend college next year, but she's not certain what she wants to really do when she gets out of college or what she wants to major in. And several of her friends are leaning towards State U, but Heather thinks she would prefer maybe a small private college if she can afford it. And my wife and I are solid middle class, let's say. We're far from wealthy, with combined annual income around $85,000. You know, too much for the aid to really poor folks, but not enough really to be that comfortable with shelling out $38,000 a year. And we have two other children, one a sophomore in high school and the other in seventh grade, have a big mortgage on the house, and we don't have college savings plans set up. And just last week, let's say that my spouse and I attended a college planning night at Heather's high school. We'll call her Heather just for fun. And frankly, we were confused and intimidated. There were so many choices and so many forms and so many potential grants and scholarships, but how do we get one? You know, I noticed in a recent Wall Street Journal article that last year parents paid for only 27% of college costs, and that institutional grants paid for 30%. What do other parents know that I don't? The cost of college is so confusing. In some cases, room and board costs more than the tuition does, and there's so many things I need to do right away. And I've come to you at Clark College Funding for advice. And let's start at the beginning. How do we begin to ID colleges that would fit my daughter's needs and desires?
That's a great, great question. And, you know, the first thing I tell all my parents is, number one, if your son or daughter hasn't done a career aptitude test, to at least narrow, show them all the careers and all the that would be good for their personality and their head, this is a great time to do it. Because that may help with selecting your colleges. Understanding at least if you're leaning towards math, science, or another type of vocational will, again, eliminate some schools. So that's where I'd start, number one, is some type of career aptitude test.
Yeah.
And then number two, and this is very, very important, we need to find out or you need to find out what your son or what Heather is looking for in a college and what you're looking for in a college. And I tend to find out that the students are not looking for the same thing as mom and dad.
Huh.
And on our website, we have a Excel spreadsheet that your parents can download. It has about 35 different criteria that they can use. And for example, you would have diversity on there, student body reputation, housing,
yes,
food, financial aid, job placement, religion, so on and so forth. And
yeah,
so I'd have mom and dad go into one room. I'd have son and daughter go into one room, in this case, Heather. And I would say, okay, circle your top 3 to 5 most important criteria of a college you're going to. And I'd have mom and dad do the exact same thing.
Yeah, it reminds me of a trip I took with my daughter to a college years ago when she was trying to select a college. It was a small college in a small college town. And we were there on a Friday night in the springtime and went out for a little walk, and we could hear a roar from fraternity and sorority row from all the partying going on. And my daughter thought that would be a great college to go to. But I thought it probably wasn't the place.
Yeah, absolutely.
She did apply and was accepted to that college, but she didn't go there, and it'll remain nameless to protect the innocent. But that's interesting. Do you find that once these criteria are completed, do you get the son or daughter together with the parents and they work out an agreement, or how does that usually work if there's a big vast difference between what the parents want and what the child wants?
Sure. No, that's typically what happens. And what we do is we say, okay, mom, dad, let me see your top three, son and daughter, let me see your top three, and then we just combine it.
Oh, I see.
And here's our criteria that we both agree is important to us. And so now we have it. I call this the funnel approach. We start with, you know, over 5,000 plus colleges and universities in North America.
Really confusing, all the colleges out there these days.
Yeah, a lot of them. But, you know, that's a good thing for me. I think students are familiar with the colleges that have big football programs and basketball programs and the Ivy Leagues, but the colleges in between, they don't know about. And
yeah,
they're great colleges, they have wonderful education, and it's up to expose them to those schools.
Well, how many colleges should we, you know, you start with narrowing this down, how many colleges should we start giving serious consideration to?
Sure. And the key is, you know, when you start to what I call the funnel approach, you start to narrow these colleges down using your criteria. You want to make sure it's a good fit socially, academically, and financially. And financially and academically, that's where a lot of counselors and even a lot of parents, I think, they find a great fit socially, you know, the right size, right location, right states, has what they want to study. But they don't look at the academic side and they don't look at the financial side.
Yeah, and it's so unfortunate if a child selects a college and it maybe is accepted, and then you find out after the fact that it's totally unaffordable. That would be very deflating, both for the child and the parent, I would think.
Absolutely. You know, in the college's point of view, they want to get the student emotionally attached to their school.
Yeah.
Right? And if they can get that student emotionally attached to that one school, they know no matter what the price tag is, more than likely that child's coming.
Yeah, it becomes a seller's market then instead of the buyer's market that we want.
That's exactly. They take control of the process, and they know it's very hard for us as parents to say no to a college for our students. You know, we're talking about our children here and their future, and, you know, it's very, very hard. So we have to take back the control. And to answer your question, ultimately, your son and daughter should apply to 6 to 10 schools.
Oh,
a combination
many.
Of state, yep, some in-state state schools, as well as some private schools.
Huh. Well, be darned. I never thought that people apply that many. I thought we narrowed down. I think I applied to about 5 colleges, as I recall. And
the average student applies about 3.
Yeah, our son just decided he was going to go to the University of Iowa, and I think that's the only place he applied to, but... you know, that's the way some people do it, but our daughter went through a long selection process, and chose the right school, I think. But well, let's say that Heather is not a star athlete. She's not an academic superstar, although she has high enough grades that, you know, above average, so she can get into college for sure. But she's not a top musician or anything like that. How can I encourage her top choice schools to want to recruit her so that it becomes a buyer's market instead of a seller's market?
Yeah, that's another great question. It all comes down to the college selection, you know, picking the right schools to apply to.
Yeah.
And if you, you know, we do this funnel approach, right, and we find 6 to 10 colleges that are a good fit, not only socially, but academically and financially, we are now in the driver's seat. But if we just randomly pick colleges, and it's based upon where my boyfriend's going to school, or who has the best sports team, or you know who where it's cool to be at, that's when you're in the seller's market.
Yeah, that's right? For sure.
And what's the problem? I mean, almost 70% of students now don't graduate from the first college that they attend.
Yeah, and they also
think about that.
So many of them take 5 or 6 years to complete college now. It's not a 4-year deal automatically like it used to be, it seems like.
No. The percentage for 6-year graduation rate is 60%.
Wow. And that just runs up the cost all the more, obviously.
Absolutely. And that these colleges to begin with, it's so important. You know, picking the right schools to begin with is so important. We think, oh, we'll just go to the state school. That'll be the cheapest way. But that might not be the best fit for your son and daughter. And in some cases, it's tougher to graduate in 4 years out of state school as opposed to a private school.
It's tough. I know I read an article recently in one of our state universities that, you know, it's getting harder and harder to get the classes that the student wants because they've had a big increase in enrollment this year. And, you know, these students are encouraged to apply way ahead of time to the courses they want. And gets really tough when you get near the senior year and you have to complete certain courses for your major and you can't get in them, and who wants to, you know, study tiddlywinks or stick around for an extra year or two until you can get into that course.
Yeah, it happens. It's happened to my nephew here at NC State. He's graduating with an engineering degree, but he can't get one course.
He's
got to wait a whole other semester.
Yeah, that's very unfortunate, but... Well, when should my daughter apply for financial assistance? Do you do that when you're applying for admission, or is it after you're admitted, or how does that work?
That's a great, great question. How the process works is that your son or daughter are going to be applying to college sometime in the fall, let's say before November.
Yeah.
At the same time, once you figure out which colleges she's applying to, you're going to have to go to these colleges' websites and see which financial aid forms that they require and when they are due.
Yeah, that's great that in the computer era, you can go to websites and get that information, because back years ago, it was, you know, you'd have to write to the colleges and go through all that. So that is a major advantage.
That helps out a lot.
So you decide which colleges to apply to, and then you go to their website. And then, you send the application in first before you, I guess there's not much point for applying for aid until you're accepted, is there? Or can you do that?
Well, you're kind of doing it at the same time.
Oh, I see.
So, for example, let's say your daughter applies for early action at a school, and you have to get in that application by October 15th.
Yeah.
So she submits her application for early action. But the school says, you know what, since she's applying to early action, I want you to fill out the CSS profile form by November 1st.
Oh, I see.
So you have to go in and fill out this financial aid form while the college is looking over the application.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So the most important thing then is those colleges you've narrowed down to, you should immediately get to their website and see what their timing deadlines are for the various forms and get those forms you need and stuff.
Right. There's really three basic forms, so your parents know. There's the FAFSA form, the free application for Fed aid. That is used by every college that gives out federal aid. And that form you cannot submit until January 1st of the senior year.
Oh, I see.
Okay? Then there's the CSS profile form, which you just mentioned. It's used in addition to the FAFSA form. It's a little bit more detailed than the form. It's used primarily by the private schools. and then some colleges just make up their own financial aid for
them.
So it just depends on the school. Yeah, it just depends on which of the three forms they're going to use. It can be two of the three or one of the three. And you just got to get organized and figure out which forms are needed, when they're needed and when they're due. And take your time on those financial aid forms. The Department of Education states that 80% of all parents who fill them out, fill it out wrong.
Oh, great.
Yeah. And so, you know, it can cost you money. I've had many a parent, I looked at their financial aid forms, and I said, you know, how many years have you been filling this form out like this? And they'd say, well, 3-4 years. And they go, well, you know, you've lost financial aid 3-4 years because you filled the form out wrong.
Oh, great. That's great to find out after the fact, isn't it?
I know. It's terrible. It really is. You just want to be careful with those forms and take your time doing it. Again, the typical question that a lot of parents don't get right, the financial aid forms will ask about investments.
Oh.
And so just let me know about your investments. And what they mean are any non-qualified retirement account investments. So any brokerage account, savings, checking accounts, you know, CDs, money market on there. But you don't put your 401ks, you don't put your IRAs in there, you don't put any pension funds in there. And that's where a lot of parents make those mistakes. They'll add it into that amount, which, you know, throws off the numbers, obviously.
Yeah, which obviously has nothing to do with how you're going to finance your child's education. If it's a retirement fund or something like that, you can't access it without a penalty to like 60 and a half or something.
That's true, except for IRAs and Roth IRAs.
Yeah.
That's the only one you don't get penalized if you withdraw money
from
college.
Yeah, well, let's talk about another subject, college visitation. How many do you generally recommend that they visit all the colleges they apply to, or you wait till you're accepted, or what's a good way to handle that? I suppose there's no general ground rule on that. But
generally you want to if you can. Because a college might look great on paper, and it might look great on the Internet, and everything sounds great, but until you set foot on that campus, you're just never going to know. And I tell you, young women and young men are completely different with college visits. For some reason, young women, once they set foot on campus, within 30 minutes, they know if they want to go to that school or not.
Yeah.
For a young man, it's a little bit longer for them to decide on that or not. But it's interesting that they go through that process. But if you're a senior right now and you just can't fit all your college visits in before the applications are due, that's okay. I would still apply to those schools you think are good and then try to fit in a visit later on in the year, because you do not have to make a commitment to a school until May 1st.
Yeah.
So you have time.
It's definitely best to visit those schools when the schools are in session. I remember years ago when I was in high school, we visited a bunch of colleges in the summer, and they were all empty. Nobody was around, and you didn't get a feel at all for what was going on there. But what is some of the – you mentioned a checklist, I think, in your literature that ensures you get all the information that you need when you go to a college visitation. What kind of things should you be looking for when you go there specifically?
Yeah, when you go on the college visits, there are some certain questions I think you should ask on a college visit. Number one, I always like to, as a parent, to ask, what are the most important admissions criteria and how are they ranked? So are you looking at my SAT score number one, my class rank number two, my GPA number three, my SA number four, or is it completely different? Is it extracurricular activities number one, SA number two, transcript number three? You see what I mean?
Yeah. No,
every college is a little different, and they put more importance on different things. So your larger state schools tend to put a lot of emphasis on those standardized test scores and GPA.
Yeah,
where smaller private schools tend to put not as much emphasis on your SAT score or GPA.
Huh.
Or they put a lot of emphasis on your transcript and GPA, but not on the SAT score.
Yeah, I know a lot of state schools, and in-state students, they have to take all the students above a certain grade point or a certain class rank in their high schools or something. So there's not a lot of discretion there, I guess.
Right. And that's great, and that works out wonderful for admission purposes. But again, because so many students are transferring or leaving the first school that they apply to, sometimes they just don't realize that going to these schools don't their personality and what they're trying to do. And they go there for a year and they go, you know what, Mom, Dad, I don't like this. This isn't for me. Or it's too easy or too hard. Or, you know what I mean? Or politically, we don't see eye to eye.
Yeah.
Or whatever it may be. And so, you know, while that's a great, great, you know, fallback option, I still think all my parents and students should look around and see what other colleges that are out there.
Yeah.
Just to make sure.
Yeah, if you're accepted by more than one school, what's the best way to comparison shop once you've been accepted and perhaps get the top two or three choices to actually compete and sweeten the offer? Is there a way to do that? Or
Yes and no. As you can imagine, when I first started doing my business back in 2003, we were one of the only companies that went out and tried to help, you know, negotiate with the colleges, if you will, to try to get a better award letter. But now every parent goes to colleges and asks for more money, right? And so colleges are turning their heads and going, hey, you want more money? Don't worry about it. Don't even come here. So you got to give them a reason why to give you more money, and it's just not because you need it. Okay.
Yeah.
The best way is to have a competing college with a better award letter, and you can go to that other college and say, "Hey, College A, guess what College B gave me? It's a little bit more, and I would love to go to your school, but if you can just give me another $2,000 to match this award letter, I'll sign up today."
Yeah, if you have something solid like that that you can offer as evidence, they're much more likely to compete than just say, yeah, we need more money, or my child's a great person.
Right.
So
every parent does that. Every parent calls the financial aid office and says, hey, can I get some more money? Where can I get more money? And they go, well, we don't have any more, right?
Yeah.
And so you got to give them a reason why to give you more money.
I'm kind of surprised that, well, I guess since – it now says grant money is paying more of the college education this year than parents are. I guess that is going on a lot. People are becoming more aware of the fact that there are sources of income out there that doesn't come out of their pocket. But,
yeah, but you know what? The colleges, they're very stingy, and they're very crafty and very sophisticated on who they give them. So you got to be, I mean, you're kind of like the JV basketball, high school basketball team going against the Miami Heat. The colleges are the professionals.
That's
they do this for a living. And, these are high school moms and dads who sometimes have never done this before, and so they're going against this huge multi-million-dollar corporation.
Yeah.
And they live it. And so they know what they're doing.
Yeah, they sure do. Well, I know in a recent newspaper article that they talked about that 17% of families use a 529 college savings plan, and I guess I'm ignorant, but I've never heard of a 529 college savings plan. What are these exactly, and when do you need to start those? I guess that's probably out of the question if your child's already a senior and you don't in high school and you don't have one, but what are those 529 plans?
529 plan is a plan where you can put money away or save money for college, and some states will give you a tax deduction for contributing to a 529 plan. It grows tax-free, and then when you pull it out to pay for college, some of it will be tax-free as well.
It's kind of like an IRA then for a different purpose.
Kind of like a Roth IRA for a different purpose, but you know, I would suggest if anyone has a 529 plan, be very, very cautious. I'm not a big proponent of the 529 plans. And I say that because I've seen the negative effects a 529 plan can have on a final award letter. And I'm just not talking about need-based aid. I'm talking about dollar-for-dollar reductions of aid from a school because you have a 529 plan.
You have to tell them if you have one, I guess.
Well, as soon as you write that check and they see that, hey, you got a 529 plan, next year they might reduce your aid accordingly.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because they consider that like an outside resource, almost like a scholarship that your son or daughter got.
Huh.
So they might say, hey, I'm not going to go into my give you much. You have money coming out of your pocket.
So something that sounds so great, you know, as parents with young children start putting money away, and then it turns out you may be spending more overall for your child's education than you would have had to had you not established that plan. That's kind of interesting, isn't it?
It is. It is. It's kind of messed up that way. You know, there's worse places you could put. I mean, I love parents that save money for college. I think that's a great idea. And, of course, a 529 plan is not the worst place you can put it.
Yeah.
But I think there are better places. Let me put it that way.
Yeah. Well, are there some cutting-edge tax, financial, and academic strategies that I should consider? What are a couple of new ideas that I might try to help finance Heather's education?
Well, number one, and I keep going back to this, it's picking the right schools to begin with, because not all colleges are looking for the same type of students. Let me give an example. Let's say DePaul University. If you go online and look at DePaul University's mission statement, they essentially say, we are looking for students from working-class families, first-generation college students, right? Or if you go to Caltech's website, they basically say that we want to recruit students that have high math and science aptitude.
Boy, that's for sure. You better be way up there for Caltech.
Way up there. So Caltech
DePaul
is not
also
looking...
wants to recruit a few better basketball players. They've been pretty lousy for years in the Big East.
Well, that's true. That's true. But for the normal student, they're not. Caltech is not going after the same student as DePaul University.
Yeah.
Our university is not going after the same type of student as University of Hawaii, right?
Yeah.
Or Iowa State.
Yeah.
And so many parents, we make the assumption that every college is looking for the same students. Their colleges out there are looking for BC students, that are recruiting BC students.
Yeah.
And so we just have to find a good fit between your son and daughter in the college. And if it goes both ways, meaning that the child wants to go to the school and the college wants the child, now we have the opportunity of getting some merit aid money and some of the college's own money.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, what are some of the biggest mistakes parents make in, when they're trying to determine where their son or daughter is going to go to college, and how can we avoid those mistakes?
Well, a big mistake I tell my parents is that you don't want to build out your college list for two or three and work your way out. You know, we talked about this. We want to use the funnel approach and start with 5,000-plus colleges and work your way down. You also don't want to trust the financial aid officer. And, again, please don't take this the wrong way. I love working with the colleges and the financial aid admissions officers at the colleges. They're really, really good people. But they get paid by the colleges. And so they're after the colleges. They're not necessarily looking after your son and daughter. So you just need to know that there is a bias there, and they're doing their job, and they do it very, very well. And they're just looking after the colleges because that is their job.
Yeah, you're the parent. You're looking after your son and daughter, and it's their job to look after the college, obviously. And they have probably hundreds of thousands of applicants that they have to consider giving aid to, and obviously they can't favor you over someone else unless there's really a good reason for them to.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. And you apply to 6 to 10 schools, a combination of some private as well as some state schools. And now you're maybe creating some competition between these schools.
Yeah.
And study for the SAT and ACT. It's not the only thing colleges are looking for, but it is very important, especially with your state schools.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, tell us a little about your counseling and support services. I noticed you have a cum laude program, a magna cum laude, and a summa cum laude level of support, and that sounds very interesting. What kind of services do you provide to clients? I just really think it sounds very valuable, but I'm not sure just what services you offer to them.
Well, thank you. Yes. Of course, in my book, College Aid for Middle Class America, which is in Barnes & Noble's and Amazon.com as well. But for the parents that, you know, want more one-on-one attention other than the book, they can work with me and my team. And we give them 3 levels of service depending on what they need. And we try to take the pressure off our son, our children, and our parents and say, hey, let us help you. Let us guide you. Let us walk you through this process. We worked with over 1,000 families from families all over the United States, and we do a really, really good job. We save around 200 hours of work, and on average, we save $40,000 to $60,000 in college costs. So
well,
we know what we're doing.
Worth it if you can do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. The analogy I like to give my parents is say, hey, if you were going to buy a car and the car had $50,000, and I said, hey, you know what? I can show you how to buy that car for $15,000. Would you want it? You know, would you want that information?
Yeah.
And most people say, yeah. Yeah, and so that's kind of what we're doing. We're saying, hey, there's this great colleges out here, but if we can show you how to reduce that price and find a great college partner and they graduate in 4 years, boy, we're going to save you a lot of money and a lot of time.
Yeah, so they can go to your website then and determine those levels of support, I guess, that you offer. And also, of course, your college aid for middle-class America. And it's just, I know from my experience that, especially with our daughter, who was our oldest child, it just was so intimidating when I went to that high school night when they talk about college funding and all these options, and you've got all these government options. And, of course, you had all this on the radio and TV recently, all this news about the interest levels for college loans and this big fight in the Congress. And I certainly don't want your child to be burdened down, or the worst thing I can imagine also as a parent is to be burdened down with a bunch of parent debt and then have your child drop out of college and you still have that debt pay off. Or
Nothing worse than that. You're
yeah,
right.
So that, no, that would that's why it's so valuable to have a system and to read your book or to get in touch with you, to have a system in mind and know what you're doing before you start doing it, and attack things one at a time, and like you say, narrow those colleges down before you just start willy-nilly, contacting a bunch of schools or driving around visiting or listening to where your daughter's friend Emily is going to college, and just decide, well, she's going there, maybe I should go there too because we're good friends.
Right.
Or even worse, your boyfriend, where he's going
That's
to college.
That's true. That is true. I tell my parents, if they're in that situation, I say, you know what? If it's just, they will somehow work it out, even if they're far apart. If it was meant to be, it's meant to be.
That's true. There's so many of these romances that they're so close in high school, and then they go to different schools, and slowly but surely that relationship usually falls apart, unless it was meant to be in the first place.
Even if they go to the same school, it usually falls apart, to be honest
with you. Yeah, that's true, because children grow up and they grow, their interests change, and obviously there's a lot of other attractive people around the college campus.
Right. A lot of temptation, exactly.
And your website, again, is clarkcollegefunding.com, isn't that right?
It is, or you can type in collegeaidformiddleclass.com, and it takes you to the same website.
That sounds great, and we certainly
for any of your listeners, by the way, I offer a free 30-minute consultation to learn more about you, and also if you'd like to know what your expected family contribution number is, I'll be able to show you that as well.
Oh, that's so great. I think that is something that I would definitely want to take advantage of. I wish you'd been around 30-some years ago when we went through this college. Or it wasn't that many years. I don't remember how many, 20 years ago. But it was such a frustrating and scary time with our first child. Like I said, our son decided he was just going to go to the University of Iowa. But we probably could have got a better financial deal if I'd known what I was doing for him as well. But, that was just a state school, and it was pretty easy process. But with my daughter, we had a number of different colleges we considered, and she ended up working. That's another quick question for you. Is there certain types of jobs that are better for students to have? Do you recommend that they work to pay for part of their tuition and expenses while they're in college, or is this something that would detract from their college experience?
No, I really encourage my students to work while they're in school, and there's been many, many studies that say as long as they're not working more than 25 hours a week, they're going to be better than their normal student academically.
Huh, that's interesting, because I always wondered whether that was something they should do or not. But it didn't. It was good for both our children. They learned some working habits as well as, and it didn't hurt them academically. But I'm glad to hear you say that, because that's always been a concern. Some certain parents that you know, that would detract from their college experience.
No, I think it looks impressive too when you put on your resume, "I helped pay my way through college."
Yes, it definitely does. And well, I want to thank you so much for joining us again, Ryan. I think you've been very helpful. And as a last word to parents, you got something to encourage them as they go into this process.
Well, take your time. Be diligent. Please don't push your children too hard, but encourage them if you can. And let's make college an affordable reality for every parent.
Yeah, and keep that debt load down so that they aren't facing that for the next 20 years or whatever.
That's a great point.
And thanks so much for joining us today, Ryan. Have a great day.
Thanks, Roy. I appreciate it. Anytime. Have a great day.
Well, from time to time, we introduce websites of potential interest to you, the listener. And today, I call attention to a site that ties in perfectly with our current theme of career transition and revival. Do any of these descriptions apply to you? You are anywhere from your 40s on up and ready to rediscover who you are and what you want to do with the rest of your life. You want work that gives meaning and purpose to your life. You feel stuck and either bored or overwhelmed in your current job. You fear you'll never will find work that truly fits who you are, someone to pay you to have a good time and do what you're really good at doing. And here's an interesting one. You may be facing retirement soon, but you plan to continue contributing in some way, whether it be for a part-time job or even charity or pro bono work. Oftentimes, we know that we want something different, a career that fits who we are and what we want, but we just don't know where to begin, and we need someone to help us gain confidence to take that first step. We need someone to guide us along the way. And for many of you at midlife, the ideal solution may be your very own career coach. And I found one who specifically targets us, women and men in their 40s and beyond. And the website I'm talking about is www.careerchangepathways.com. And our guest is certified career change and transition life transition coach. And she's the website sponsor, Janet Cranford. And hello, Janet, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Hi, Roy. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
You know, your background reminds me of myself. Like me, you said you spent many years in a career that you kind of fell into, and you were good at what you did, but you weren't that fulfilled, and you discovered then your true life passion as a career coach and founded Career Change Pathways in 2006. And please describe for us briefly what your Authentic Career Change program is all about.
Well, the Authentic Career Change program recognizes that a lot of people in midlife have lost sight of possibilities after, you know, years of being on the wrong track or in a career they fell into. You know, the work they've been doing hasn't been a good expression of who they are.
Yeah.
And so the program involves six steps. It's broken into two components. One is the inner pathways of exploration and self-discovery, and the other the outer pathways of creation and action, you know, taking action out there in the world.
Yeah.
Kind of moving from the inside out.
Selling yourself to the world, specifically. Whether it be to a potential employer or to potential customers or whatever, I guess that would be the outside.
Yes.
And on your website, you offer a variety of coaching options from a single session to monthly coaching. Tell us a little about some of those, and also, you know, depending on what your objectives are, you have different types of consulting that you offer.
Well, I offer standard monthly coaching or coaching by the hour. That is pretty standard. That is more of a, it can be a highly focused session together or ongoing, you know, to really, to make a complete transition can take a bit of time.
Yeah.
And some people want to have that monthly ongoing accountability and focus.
Yes, the accountability is so key. I think that's one of the greatest benefits of the coach. I know when I was years ago was out of work, and to have someone I was responsible with meeting periodically to tell what I've been doing and to make sure that, you know, I wasn't just out on the golf course or something. It's great to have that accountability.
Yes, we often self-sabotage ourselves.
Yeah,
when
that's
trying
for sure.
To make it, we want to stay in those comfort zones.
And it's so easy to make an excuse, you know, why you can't do something that particular day or
yes,
that particular week.
That's for sure. The other options are I have a career exploration program, which is pretty popular. That one is figuring out what you want to do when you grow up. A lot of people really come to midlife or find themselves in midlife not sure what they want, and this is the chance to get back in touch with who they are and what they really want. It starts with some self-assessment to identify your key strengths, your talents, your interests, your personality preferences and values, and then put it all together and look at the options that are out there that would fit those things that characterize who you are.
Yeah, that's similar to what we call taking a vacation to define your vocation. You know, you step back from the whatever you're doing. I don't mean you take time off from if you have a job from what you're doing, but you take time away mentally to really do some self-assessment before you run around and start looking for that alternative job. Or ideally, if you're off work right now, you don't have to take a vacation from your workplace, but you can take a vacation from the recruiting to decide what you really want. And that would be an excellent place where that career exploration program would fit in.
Mm. Yes. The other, well, it also involves brainstorming and looking at realistic options.
Yeah.
So you narrow down. It's not just all these ideas that that are out there, but things that could be realistic that are.
Yeah, no, if you're 55 years old and you've never had any medical training, you're not going to suddenly become a physician.
Exactly.
Or a star baseball player.
The other program that I offer is for people who are clear about what they want to do next, and that's the career transition program.
Yeah, it's so helpful to have those step by step of what you need to do. And
yes, this is really taking the steps, like you said, forward once you know what you want to do, finding out exactly how to get there.
Yeah.
So, you know, creating a strategy, the most important thing here, and trying on things for size, doing some informational interviews, getting to know people in the field. The most important thing at this point, though, is to create and build new networking connections, you know, whether you're looking for a traditional job or wanting to start a business of your own.
Yeah. You know, networking is so crucial these days, and it's so much easier to do now that we have the Internet.
Yes.
Than it used to be. And you also offer these single-focus sessions for somebody that has a specific issue or question they want resolved.
Yes. Yeah.
And what I think is fascinating, you offer a free 30-minute phone consultation to see if it's a good fit. And tell how does someone schedule that or find out about that?
They can either call me at 561-509-2084, or they can fill out a request form that they can find at www.careerchangepathways.com /free consultation, free-consultation.
Oh, I see. And I noticed there are a number of other career change resources that you offer on that website. including links to recommended books and websites, and you have a blog that I found fascinating, and you even offer a free ebook, 5 Steps to Knowing What You Want to Do, and I think that would be a good place to start if somebody, you know, is up in the air on just what they want to do with the rest of their lives.
Yeah, that has some exercises in it. It can help you get, you know, some idea, some clarity about your interests and passions and your strengths and talents. It's a good start. And then it shows how to put them together to identify some careers that might be a good fit.
Yeah, well, obviously, career coach is not for everyone, but I personally think that it's a great idea if you're stuck in neutral by fear and you don't know what you want to do, or you don't know what you may want to know what you want to do, but you don't know how to get there. And I wish you had been around, Janet, in the early 90s when I was at Loose Ends after I lost my corporate executive job and floundered around for a number of years. And if I had your coaching, I probably would have written the 2 books I wrote and gotten middle age renewal training off, launched much sooner than I actually did. And I think that you know, your website and your coaching program fits in perfectly with what we're trying to accomplish here on Middle Age Renewal and our program here. So thank you so much for, and once again, what was that website?
www.careerchangepathways.com.
Yeah, and that phone number again, if someone wants to reach you about the consultation.
561-509-2084.
Yeah, and I would highly recommend if you're at loose ends on your career, or you're just dissatisfied with where you are today, or also if you're currently off work, it's definitely, you know, before you start running around and looking for something else to do, you want to be a step ahead by knowing precisely what you're looking for and have a real discipline program in mind before you go out and start pounding the pavement. And thank you so much for joining us today, Janet.
My pleasure, Roy, and you're doing some wonderful work on your website.
I appreciate it, and best of luck, and I hope a lot of the listeners who have that need contact you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.